Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with Francis Schopp. Together, we own Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi Restaurants in Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. You know, there's so much written about restaurants today. I mean, if you're a computer junkie, I could sit there till four in the morning. I mean, and now with this show and the restaurants we have, the volume of email we get, and somebody else reads it before we get it. Sorry, guys, but the stuff that gets sent through to us from our staff is monstrous, and we love. By the way, if you're out there in podcast land, send us an email. Let us know where you're listening. Let us know where you're from. Let us know what you like or don't like about the show.
We do very much enjoy it.
We really do enjoy
it. It's a little time-consuming, but I'll tell you, it's one of the more fun parts of the job.
But we still got to find time to read all the print publications. Then we read blogs and all that stuff. I have to say, rarely, though, have I seen something as poorly written. And there's a lot of bad stuff out there, too.
The whole theory of I read it on the Internet, so it must be true.
Yeah.
Is really not true.
I know, because I write stuff on the Internet. So this is from Epicurious.com, which is a site I don't know much about. But, Mark, you pointed this out to me. Mm-hmm. This is the worst. It's a top 10 worst restaurant trends. You know, people like to make lists, right? So this is a list in the opinion of Tanya Steele, editor-in-chief of Epicurious magazine. These are the worst trends. Ready? Okay, here we go. Number 10 is foam. So there are foams. A lot of high-end restaurants use foams as a textural counterpoint. Relatively new development.
Yeah.
What's the problem?
I don't know why it's a bad restaurant development. Are people overusing it? Maybe it's a little overused, but
you do it poorly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whatever.
Right. It's overused if you're doing it badly.
But I don't get it. Okay. 9, unisex bathrooms. It's hard enough to share bathrooms with the opposite sex at home. Are they talking about, like, you walk in and there's a sink in the center and there's a men's room to the right and the ladies?
No, I think they're talking about a bathroom where you can go in if you're a man and when the man's done, you can go in if you're a woman.
Get over it.
You know what I'd rather have?
What?
An extra 6 inches at the table.
Yeah, right. If you want to put it in two separate bathrooms like that, add all that extra bathroom space, be prepared for your prices to go 50%.
There it is. I mean, especially if you're talking about a small restaurant. When you're talking about a small restaurant like that,
if you want to
double the size of the bathroom, well, take two tables out of your 10-seat restaurant, add 20% to the price of the entrees.
Especially with the Americans with Disabilities Act, current code of building, you now have to, a handicapped person has to be able to land their helicopter in the bathroom and turn it around. It's monstrous. Okay. Anyway, I love this one. Overuse of the terms, this is their 7 worst restaurant trend. Overuse of the terms local and artisanal. These days, you can't open a restaurant without claiming that you're buying local.
Right.
that's
right.
One of the best restaurant trends in the history of America.
The food's better.
Long live that restaurant trend.
Okay, I'm tired of hearing restaurants tell me that they're buying better food. I'm tired of that. Stop buying better food.
Okay, the best food comes from local farmers. That's why.
Campbell's. Hi, we're serving the Campbell's chunky soup today.
And, Ms. Steele, the reason that people put local and artisanal on the menu is so that you can see that these people are supporting local agriculture, which means two things. One, it's the right thing to do. They're sustaining our choices, and they're sustaining the ability to have good food. And two, the best food is gotten locally. And a lot of people seek that out. And if you don't let them put it on the menu, the dummies like you who don't care where their food comes from and the people who really care about buying local produce from local farms won't know the difference. And so it all becomes a hodgepodge. And the other thing is, when you buy local, when you go to that extra effort, you've got to charge a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And people are willing to pay more if they see that it's local. Get it? It's not a trend.
It is a trend.
I'm sorry, get it? It's not a bad trend. It's not a fad. It's not stupid.
What?
Local and artisanal.
And
get
now
it?
I know from the menu
get it?
That somebody's putting some extra effort in here. And I've said this when it comes to other things. As soon as I recognize that someone's putting extra effort in to buy better ingredients, or they're putting extra effort in to find better wines, any time that I notice that someone's putting extra effort in, chances are they're going to put a better product out because they're trying harder.
Okay, ready? Here's another one. And I couldn't agree with you more, Mark. Number six, worst restaurant trend. Menus brimming with more information than an iPod database. To enjoy the brioche bread pudding, is it really necessary to know the name of the farm that supplied the eggs?
Well, if the eggs taste better from that farm.
Or if the eggs are really, really good. Or you care that it comes from someplace that doesn't use antibiotics or hormones.
Or certified humane or whatever. Whatever thing that you may care about. Why wouldn't you want to know that?
And if the eggs were like, you know, ShopRite eggs, and they put that on the menu, right? It's not any good information. But if there's a local farm where there's a local farmer, and those eggs are fresh, and those eggs taste different because of that, and cost more because of that, then of course it should be on the menu. Dummy.
Listen, even Tony Soprano says that his eggs taste better because they come from a family farm. Okay, all you got to do is watch The Sopranos to know that.
And we're from Jersey, so you better watch out. Okay, you ready? Here's the number three worst restaurant trends. Fancified raw cuisine. Despite several prominent chefs' exhortations, this tasteless, unhealthy trend is both time-consuming to make and expensive to buy.
Okay, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something because it's my turn to get on my high horse. One of the finest restaurants I've ever been to in my life, and I am no granola cruncher. I am no bring me a salad. That's all I'm eating. Okay,
it's a big fraternity guy with a beer hat.
One of the finest restaurant meals I've ever had in my life was at a restaurant in Larkspur, California, called Roxanne's, and it was all raw food. The entire meal was raw food, and it was phenomenal.
And what do you mean unhealthy? What is raw food unhealthy? Since when is raw food unhealthy? This is the dumbest list I've ever seen.
Well, because one of the things that we've learned is for most foods, when you cook it, the longer you cook it, the more nutrients it loses. So don't tell me unhealthy, okay? Because what we know is generally the more you cook things, the more unhealthy it is.
This is the list of the 10 worst restaurant trends from Epicurious.com. We're putting it on it's number one on our list of 10 worst lists.
It is. We have a new list starting, and it's the 10 worst list.
Oh, man. So fancified raw cuisine. And, yeah, actually, Roxanne's is still open as a caterer because Roxanne was a rich lady who got bored and then said, all right, we're done.
Yeah, the restaurant's one of the richest not open in America. Any longer. But spectacular.
But there are a couple of places in Manhattan working on raw cuisine, and it's not tasteless. And sure, remember when the first organic restaurants came out? There was a bunch. They were not as amazing as they are now. But now everybody's using organic stuff, and they're getting the best produce, the best tasting produce on the market is the organic stuff.
Dan Barber at Blue Hill has one of the finest restaurants in New York right now.
Right. But that started somewhere. That started with some restaurants that were a little taste challenged in the beginning, but worked to build up the awareness and the produce to make it top notch. And that's what raw food's doing right now. So. Back off, Tanya Steele.
I just got to talk about number one, just so I know we don't have a lot of time left. Celebrity chefs who never cook, okay? Mary Battaglia owns, what, 8, 10, 12 restaurants now?
Go to any one of them any night.
It's spectacular. Be quiet, okay? Celebrity chefs that produce great restaurants, be quiet.
As long as they're all great.
Exactly.
What's the problem?
What is the problem? If they can pass that knowledge down, because let's face it, even in the restaurants you go to, the chef can't cook every single plate. So he better be teaching, he better have a great plan, and he better be passing that along to his people.
Epicurious.com, top 10 worst restaurant trends. We disagree. We like 5 of them. But we do agree that this is our top worst list on Epicurious.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Francis Shot and Mark. Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Eric Orange. He has founded a website called localwineevents.com, which you can check out. We're going to put a link up on our website where you can check it out. It's a place where you can find food, wine, and spirits and beer events around your local area. We post all our events up there. It's sort of automatic, and it's a tremendous clearinghouse. We subscribe to the New Jersey one and the New York one, and we post our events in Jersey, and it's a pretty interesting site. Hi, Eric. Welcome to the show.
Hi, you guys.
Eric, how are you today?
I'm doing good. It's a good day.
So why don't you tell people about your website and what the mission of the website is?
Well, excuse me, in a nutshell, it is a site for wine and food events going on around the world by city.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea was to just put them all in one place so people can find them.
You know,
go ahead.
No, it's very interesting because you check your local paper, you maybe subscribe to a mailing list from a restaurant that you particularly like, but to find all of the events, and it's really, I don't know about the rest of the sites, but the New Jersey one and the New York City one they're very encyclopedic. I mean, from classes to dinners and things like that.
We have a local website here in New Jersey that Rosie Saperstein puts up through New Jersey Monthly at njmonthly.com. But if I'm going to Chicago and I'm going to be in town for 2 or 3 days and I want to go to some wine-centric or food-centric event, I can go to your website at localwineevents.com.
Yeah, and that was kind of the point. I mean, there are local sites throughout the country, throughout the world, who have a pretty good events list. But for people who are traveling to those areas from out of state or from out of town, they may or may not find those sites. My idea was let's just get them all together, make it simple. And truly, I don't mind the local sites at all, connecting into me. I mean, the idea was to just make it easier for people to find out what's going on.
That's great. What types of events are on your site?
Well, I do have quite a smattering of just about everything. I mean, from single malt scotch tastings to wine education classes to, the typical winemaker dinner. A lot of, almost every big event out there, the Aspen Food and Wine Classic, the New York Wine Experience, all of the major ones are posted pretty regularly. But, it goes all over. I mean, there's a lot of singles wine, plant wine sort of tastings that are popping up.
Any cool new trends coming up? Anything that you're seeing happening that maybe is kind of new, like the singles wine events?
There's a couple of things that I've seen that are sort of seem to be catching on with wine. The home winemaking sort of classes, if you will, where a company, there's a couple of franchises actually that are doing it, where they, you go to the place, you help crush the grapes, you help, make wine, basically, and call it your own. Those, I think, have gained some traction over the last few years.
What now, when you have your sites up there, how do you compile this? Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't know exactly how we post our events up there. Shari takes care of it. But she tells me it's very, very easy.
They are posted by the people themselves. It's post your own, if you will. People go to the site. I've tried to make it as easy and user-friendly as possible. They just click on Submit Event, fill in the blanks, link to their own site for more information, and it's good to go. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Well, I offer several features on there that I'm pretty happy with. I mean, one of them is that I can show your events on your site by you posting them on mine.
Mm-hmm.
The idea was to just have people be able to populate their own events page from posting on my site and save them having to do it twice.
Now, is it cumbersome? Is it the type of site that you have to stumble over 10,000 things before you find something?
No. In fact, one of the things I've always tried to do is keep it simple. You go to the homepage, you pick your city, and right there is the information. You don't have to jump through a dozen hoops. You don't have to register. It's all there.
What's the motivation? I mean, is the site a profitable venture?
Sure. Yeah, it is. It's taking right off. I mean, I'm over 10 million hits a month.
Uh-huh.
I sell advertising. Primarily, it's Google. Google has, to me, a wonderful product where I just put a code on my site and it feeds me relevant ads to the site. I mean, they're appropriate. In a lot of cases, they are city and wine related specific ads. And then I also offer a ticketing system in there where people who don't have online credit card capabilities can sell tickets to their events.
So that's you offer the ticketing system to the restaurant or the place that's having
the
event.
Exactly. And they can use it free of charge if they want.
And that way a patron who wants to buy a ticket to an event can then go through your website,
sure,
put their credit card down, and reserve a seat at whatever wine or beer or scotch event that they have.
Exactly. My system sends an email to the host, sends an email to the purchaser. I'm, you know, I track it all, and then twice a month I sit down and process checks for people.
Well, I think it's a pretty interesting idea, but it sounds very like a lot of work.
Well, honestly, it's not. I set the thing up from the very beginning to be automated as much as possible. I mean, the beauty of the internet is that you can script just about anything you want.
Well, now, what cities are you in, Eric?
Cities, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, it's worldwide by city.
So I mean, where do you see the most activity? Obviously,
well,
Bangladesh is not a big city.
It is predominantly North America. Mm-hmm. New York City is number one, followed by, I think, San Francisco, Chicago, L.A. You know, most of the major cities are pretty full calendars. You know, it starts to thin out in Wichita.
That's pretty wild. Hey, you should check out the site. It's called localwineevents.com, and if you're into wine dinners and wine events and wine classes, as we are, it's a pretty valuable tool, and there's also some pretty good editorial content that you get that comes in an email every month. We're going to talk more with Eric in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Kathleen Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Kathleen showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys radio show and Stage Left. I've just opened Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Kathleen Lombardi. You see, Kathleen Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Kathleen Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or KatherineLombardi.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Kathleen Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Our guest is Eric Orange. His site is localwineevents.com. It's a site where we post our wine events, and through any city in the world, you can go and find out what's going on in the wine and food business if you want to attend specific events. We recommend the site. But also, Eric, you send out from your site, if you subscribe, you send out a newsletter. I subscribe to the New York newsletter and the New Jersey newsletter, and that sends me all the stuff that's going on in the coming month or so. But you also have editorial content on there, interesting stuff that you can click through and read.
Yeah, I've added to it over the years. I mean, it started out as just primarily a schedule of the next 30 days. Here's what's coming up in your area for 30 days. And I've pretty much stuck to that, but over time I've added in some extra stuff. Kevin Zraley, if you know him, Windows on the World.
Yeah, been on the show.
He started supplying me with a quiz, question and answer. Just this week I've expanded that because he's so darn busy. I mean, it's been tough for him to continue to supply me a new question every week. So I've expanded that. I've got now a handful of people who are supplying the quiz. But I also offer articles written by some known and some unknown wine writers.
How do you find them?
They come to me. They post their event or their article on the site, and you know, I go through every week and choose which one I want to present, and I offer just a brief on it, a paragraph or so, and then you can click through if you want. But it gets a lot of attention. I mean, I see a lot of people telling their friends basically about the thing. But
I just want to reiterate that a website like this, localwineevents.com, two purposes really that I see for people using this. One, you sign on and you get your emails for your local events, and you can pick and choose the ones you want to go to. But two, when you're traveling to a city, either on business or pleasure, there are a lot of things going on in that city, and there's no possible way to know how to locate all those events unless there's a website like this, like Eric's.
Now, even doing searches for those kinds of events in each city, I mean, I because I've been around now for almost 6 years, I rank really well in Google for most city slant wine related searches. And if you say dinners or events, I'm almost always number one
You're number one in our book, but we got to cut it short because we got to go to the news.
okay.
The site is localwineevents.com. We're going to put a link up to our website. We recommend it. And Eric, thanks for coming on the show.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Okay, take care, man.
Thanks, Eric.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
We have joining us in the second half of the show, Carol Bird Breadbanner. She has served as a fellow to the United Nations World Health Organization. She's a professor in the Department of Nutritional Sciences at Rutgers University, and she joins us today to talk about food allergies, which are on the rise in America. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what's all the hubbub about allergies and food allergies? Why do we see so many more, so much more consciousness of allergies? Is it just that we're more aware of them, or are allergies on the rise?
Well, that's a good question. We're not exactly sure why they seem to be on the rise. Perhaps it's better diagnosis and families are going in and talking to their physicians and getting care related to them. There's a lot of theories out there, and one is the hygiene theory, which you might have heard about. It's wondering, maybe we keep our homes and our environment so clean that we're not letting our immune system get worked out well, but we're just not sure why they're on the rise.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that, you know, like, you know, the people say, you know, let your kids play in the dirt a little bit, you know, because, when I was a kid, we played in the dirt all the time.
We Purell their hands every 15 minutes.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. It seems like kids are playing inside more often and playing video games and that sort of thing. But again, it's just a theory. We don't know the real answer at this point.
Well, it does seem that allergies are on the rise.
Yes, there is evidence to indicate that allergies are definitely on the rise. Some of the data that we have indicate between about 1997 and 2002, that's the latest data we have, the number of kids with peanut allergies has doubled.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I want to throw something out there. I mean, we talk about food and food production all the time on this show. You know, there's so much that we have changed so fast in how our food comes from, and you don't even know what you eat. You know, read the ingredients to a Pop-Tart. You know, you don't know what it is that you eat. And so much of our food is processed in ways that we don't even understand, and you're not meant to understand, that, you know, the American diet in the last 20 years has gone through a sea change of what you eat. So, you know, this may be the result of a lot of things, but when you change so much so fast, there's no way to even isolate all the changes that are happening.
Now, Francis and I have posited that perhaps it's the way we grow our wheat, perhaps it's the fact that we're genetically modifying our foods, perhaps it's the high fructose corn syrup is having an effect on how the corn is genetically modified. We don't know, but
I never knew a kid with a peanut allergy when I was growing
exactly.
up. You know? Now, you're running a campaign, the Ask Before You Eat campaign out of Rutgers. What is that all about?
Well, the Ask Before You Eat campaign is to get restaurateurs of all sorts, from the smallest ice cream stand to the largest, finest dining restaurant, to just be more aware of the food allergy issue, and also to get the public more aware of the food allergy issue, because there are families that have allergies and they're really tuned into this, and there are families that don't have allergies and they're not so aware of this particular issue, and it can be a very serious health threat.
Okay, now I'm looking at your campaign literature, and I looked at it on the web, and a lot of it is directed at people talking about, you know, if you have a food allergy, you know, be sure and ask that, you know, nothing you're allergic to is in the food, et cetera, and so forth. Isn't that a little bit like a don't stick a fork in your eye campaign? I mean, don't people have allergies know to not eat the food they're allergic to?
Well, I think they do. But what we're trying to promote, and we talked to a number of restaurateurs around the state, is give people tools that they can use to better communicate with food service operations, so that they can open a dialogue and keep the dialogue going, so that they can enjoy their meal and feel as though it's a safe meal as well.
You know, it's funny. We do treat in our restaurant, we always have, food allergies as a, you know, there's a red flag that goes off. And I know there are a lot of restaurateurs who listen to the show, but these food allergies, I mean, some of them are, I mean, especially shellfish allergies and nut allergies, are people can have very immediate, very severe reactions.
They can be deadly.
Absolutely.
And what we recommend in a restaurant is when someone has a food allergy, even if you as the server are very up on what's out there and what's in the particular dishes, and they say, oh, I can't have peanuts, and you say, oh, there's no peanuts in anything, we flag that ticket. And we put a big red flag on it, and that server goes to the chef, goes to the person running food, and goes to the bussers, and everybody in the restaurant knows that table 52 position 4
right.
has a nut allergy.
Uh-huh. That's great. That's exactly what we'd like to see happen. Doesn't happen in all restaurants, however, and it's a consciousness raising about how to handle food allergies in the best way.
Well, I'm going to tell you a story, and my partner Francis here is allergic to pine nuts, and we were at one of the most expensive, most elite restaurants in Manhattan not very long ago, and Francis expressed his allergy to pine nuts. And it was taken fairly seriously,
talking dinner for two, $600, $700.
Right. The waiter went back, and they made sure there were any of the dishes that they were preparing for us had pine nuts. The only problem is there was an assortment of rolls on the table. And one of the rolls, we found an entire pine nut on the bread plate.
How'd this get here?
Which is wow. how we realized that they had given this roll to Francis.
And fortunately, in the luck of the draw, I must have picked a different roll, but I mean... It was, you know, and I don't go into anaphylactic shock or anything, but it would ruin my $600 dinner. I'll tell you
for sure.
Absolutely.
But the other thing we ask, and we ask this as restaurant owners, we take it extremely, extremely seriously when you say you have an allergy to something, and we make sure that cutting boards are changed. We make sure that anything that could possibly have touched your food is not something that you might be allergic to. One thing I ask, though, is that as a customer, if you don't like something, I'll make sure that flavor doesn't appear in your dish. If you're allergic to something, we do run the red flag up, and we do try and go through some extraordinary measures.
Don't go in if you don't like onions and say, yeah, I'm allergic to onions, because that way you figure the restaurant will take it more seriously. I mean, you'll send four people running around in circles in the middle of a busy night because you say you're allergic, and when you're allergic, you say you're allergic. I mean, that's the other side of this thing.
I think you're absolutely right about that. We don't want people crying wolf, but we want those who really truly have an issue to let the restaurant staff know.
You know, and I think that where this campaign is directed at restaurants, it has a lot of merit, because I will always remember my friend, a friend of mine, Kurt, years ago, worked at a restaurant in Manhattan, and it was a woman sitting at the table, and she said, Are there nuts in anything? He said, I have a nut allergy. He said, no, there aren't nuts in anything. And unbeknownst to him, the chef had changed the recipe of the salad, and there were very finely powdered walnuts in the salad as sort of like a secret ingredient kind of thing.
Right.
Anyway, the woman had some nuts, and her lips started to swell up, and her face started to swell up, and she started to have difficulty breathing, and had to call the paramedics. No secret ingredients.
Right, no secret ingredients. And we always tell the staff to go back and just double check to make sure the chef hasn't come up with some new wonderful way to prepare that dish.
Yep.
Can we talk just a little bit more about food allergies and their origins and maybe how people can defend themselves against it? Now, we see that food allergies, do kids outgrow their food allergies? Is that something that might change over time?
Sometimes kids do outgrow them, but sometimes they don't. And there are a number of tests that allergists can do to look to see how kids are progressing and if they have gotten over, so to speak, an allergy. I have a nephew who has had some very severe allergies, and he just recently turned 18, is getting ready to go to college, and they ran some new tests, and they found out, lo and behold, he no longer has a couple of the allergies, but some of them still are quite severe. So he now can manage in a little bit different way.
What kind of allergies did he grow out?
Well, he had some very severe allergies to nuts, which is very strange to outgrow them, because usually they stick with you. But fortunately, he's outgrown those, and you know that nuts are often a hidden ingredient in many foods.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fortunate for him.
When we come back from the break, I want to talk about responsibility, and I want to talk about the responsibilities of people who have allergies and the rights and responsibilities of people who don't have allergies and how we interact, how families who have kids that don't have allergies need to be careful, how schools need to be careful with allergies, and how, you know, people who have allergies need to take on a certain amount of responsibility for themselves. Well, you know, just because you can't have nuts doesn't mean everybody can't have nuts. Our guest is Carol Bird Breadbenner. She's a professor at Rutgers in the Department of Nutritional Science. She was a fellow to the World Health Organization, and she's an expert on allergies and mounting a campaign to make people more aware of things. Very important to people in the restaurant business and very important to you if you have kids. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schrumps. Schrumps in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest is Carol Bird Breadbinner. She is a professor at Rutgers, the Department of Nutritional Sciences. And she's joining us today to talk about food allergies, which are on the rise in America. Now, Carol, let's talk about responsibility. I mean, I think it's great. And these nut allergies among kids are amazing to me. They sort of come out of nowhere. And, you know, kids can have peanuts and terrible things can happen to them. And, you know, these allergies can be very severe. In schools, they're having peanut-free zones, you know, or peanut-free tables because some kids are so allergic they don't even want to touch this stuff.
Right.
Some schools are banning peanut butter altogether. Is that a logical response to this? I mean, where's the responsibility of the rest of us, and where's the responsibility of the individual who's allergic to make sure that that person doesn't encounter what they're allergic to?
Well, when we think about kids, especially the very young ones, they do need some protection, and those who are very hypersensitive may have a reaction just breathing or being nearby to the allergen. The other thing to think about with kids is lunch trading goes on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they might have peanut residue from the peanut butter on their hands that gets on their desk or on the table that the allergic child perhaps comes in contact with.
So should we ban peanut butter in schools?
Well, I don't know that I would go that far because it certainly is a delicious, nutritious staple food that many of us grew up on.
And some of our kids will eat nothing but peanut butter, okay?
Right, right. But I think we have to be very cognizant of the fact that this could be a life-threatening issue for some other children.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other nutritious foods that kids can eat.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they might have to forego the peanut butter sandwich at school.
Well, you know, but doesn't it strike me that when you go down the road of like, well, this one kid in 1,000 is deathly allergic to this, one kid in 5,000 is deathly allergic to that, one kid in 4,000 is deathly allergic to that, does everyone need to sanitize our diet so that the kids who are allergic don't, I mean, isn't it the responsibility of the families with the kids who have allergies to, you know, if your kid can't be near a nut, then you need to do what it takes to keep that my kid can still have peanut butter, you know, I mean. Doesn't that present a weird quandary?
Yeah,
I'm not stating the answer. I'm stating a question.
Right. Where's the responsibility?
Right. Well, I think we probably all bear some responsibility, especially when we're talking about young children, and especially when they're in a public place such as a school. And it is our responsibility as adults to help them stay safe. Fortunately, most kids are not hypersensitive and leading to anaphylaxis from eating a peanut butter sandwich or whatever the allergen happens to be. But we do have to think about the balance of helping them to stay safe. And if there is a severe situation, then we do have to find ways to help keep those kids safe. One of the things we heard over and over from parents of kids who have allergies is that they just wish others who are fortunate enough not to have allergies could understand the situation that they're in and be responsive to whatever extent they can be.
I think that it presents a real issue for parents. I mean, I guess in your awareness campaign, the Ask Before You campaign, a large target would be parents who have kids when other kids with allergies come over? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty great responsibility. I mean, Mark has four kids. If the neighbor's kid comes over and has a severe allergy where he touches a peanut, he's going to...
Right.
Know.
I mean, the little girl across the street is 6 years old. She comes over all the time. We feed her all the time. If she's allergic to something, they've got to let me know somehow.
Exactly. One of the fact sheets that we were developing or that we have developed and is available on our website indicates how you as a neighbor might prepare yourself just in case a playmate comes over so that you know the best ways to handle the situation. Same way with the parents of that child. They need to communicate with you and just say, hey, look, when Sally comes over, would you make sure that if you're having a snack that she doesn't have any of the peanuts? And it's also the responsibility of the parent to start teaching kids their own skills about managing themselves as well.
I think that the parent of the child who has the allergies must be proactive. They must go and talk to their neighbors, talk to their friends,
absolutely,
talk to the places where their kids are going to be and say, listen, we need to watch out for this.
Exactly.
Because my six-year-old doesn't know that a granola bar is the same thing as peanuts.
That's exactly right.
Well, you know, this campaign is how old? When did you begin the campaign?
Well, we officially launched it last Saturday at Ag Field Day, Rutgers Ag Field Day,
mm-hmm.
and we have a number of events going on around the state. We're in the supermarkets that have the video loops at the checkout and in a number of movie theaters before the beginning of the feature films. And you'll see us in a number of newspapers as well.
So how do people find out about this campaign? If you've got a kid at home who's got an allergy and you want to get some information, do you have a website we can go to?
Yes, we do. It's www.foodallergy, all run together, .rutgers.edu.
And, you know, we're going to put a link up on our website at restaurantguysradio.com to that very site, which will make it easier for you to link up there. I have to say, when I first heard about it, I did... The producer presented it to me, and she said, yeah, it's a campaign that tells people not to eat the stuff they're allergic to. And I did say, so how does that differ from a don't stick a fork in your eye campaign? But it actually has a lot of good information, and it's not just about the person with the allergy. It's about the people in the community in general and how we all need to work together to be aware of this. And if you have a restaurant out there or you work in a restaurant out there, this is true. This is from the front lines. When someone says, I'm allergic to something, you flag the ticket, you tell the kitchen, you tell the busboy, you make sure it's not in the rolls, and you go to an extra effort. And if you're a customer out there, don't tell us you're allergic
right.
unless you're really allergic.
Every employee in the restaurant must know that there's an allergy on a certain table. They must know.
Hey, Carol, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. We're going to link you up to their site at Rutgers. There's a lot of good information. If you have a restaurant, there's some signs that you can get to put up. And it really, really important part of restaurant education. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey.
So, Francis, I got to tell you, times have changed. Because I brought peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to... I remember when I was in preschool, it was the only thing I would eat was peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
If they banned peanut butter from me in
You'd
school...
You'd be a svelte 145 pounds today.
The nuns said to my mother, and this is an actual quote, if you give him another peanut butter and jelly sandwich, he's going to turn into a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You have the attempt. You know that's funny? You know, my nuns had an Irish accent, first of all. And I'll share with you a totally unrelated funny story.
You have a totally unrelated funny story? I can't believe it.
I don't know how funny it is. When I was in the first grade, I went, and the nuns, of course, all knew my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And when in an Irish household, if you get a toothache or you get a tooth come in or something, your mother gives you a little shot of whiskey and you rub it on your gum. Like, you're not buying Ambisol. Take
right.
the whiskey. It's the same thing. Right? So and I didn't know any better. And so I got a toothache in school, right? So I went up to my first grade teacher. And I said, sister? She said, yes. She said, do you have any whiskey? What do I know, right? So she was a friend of my mom's. Thought it was hysterical. She sent me to the school nurse and said, go ask the school nurse. I said, excuse me. Do you have any whiskey? She thought it was hysterical, brought me to the principal, who then called my mother, who I'm sure was tempted to just bring me in some whiskey.
Principal didn't find it quite as amusing.
No, they did. Actually, they thought it was great because they all knew my parents, and that's my – I was destined to be the beverage manager of a restaurant from
– It started with whiskey on my teeth when I was six.
In the St. Financius
Next
school
thing
uniform.
You know.
Hey, listen, we were talking about food allergies today, and I want to tell you something else. If you have a food allergy or a dietary restriction – We don't mind those in fine dining restaurants. We don't. If it's an a la minute restaurant, stuff's prepared from scratch, they shouldn't mind it. What you got to do is call us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because if you tell us after you sit down that you have some sort of food allergy and I got, you know, my options are very limited, I'm very busy, I got to think, I got to be fast on my feet, and I'll come up with the best thing I can come up with. If you call me and say, hey, we're coming into dinner next week,
yep.
And by the way, my wife is allergic to nuts, or my son's allergic to bread, or my cousin can't have gluten, I've got a week to prepare you something.
Or I'm a vegan or a vegetarian or whatever your dietary constraints are.
I can leave the onions out of, or I can go get something else in from the market, and it's easy for me if I know in advance. So there's a little tip for you, whether you're allergic or you have some dietary constraint or something you want special. Most restaurants on the high end, if you give them enough time, are more than happy to do it for you. I hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.